You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hello there, and thank you for downloading The Agenda's podcast from the 28th of March. And on the programme today, as Airbnb rental properties boom in Dubai, with the number of listings doubling in the last 3 years, and professionals suggesting Dubai is the most profitable market, we got into the figures with ValueStrat. We also found out how you could be making money with Radate Nagate, the CEO of SmartStay Middle East and the founder of the B&B in Dubai community. Plus, mortgage broker Joe Phillips told us whether banks will lend for short-term rentals. Meanwhile, it is definitely mosquito season right now. And after the recent rains, we have all noticed more of the biting insects. But could it be leading to more cases of dengue fever? We talked tropical diseases with Dr. Syed Nadir from Adam Vital Hospital. Meanwhile, diabetes is worryingly prevalent in the UAE. 1 in 5 people suffer from the condition, and that number is expected to double by 2040. Now a brand new diabetes centre is due to open in Abu Dhabi. We will find out how the doctors are hoping to help in the community. Plus, Dubai has won yet another world record. So how many does that make now? We delved into the weird and wonderful world of records with the team at Guinness. How many Guinness World Records do you think Dubai holds?
Congratulations, you are officially amazing!
So that actually is when Hatter won its Guinness World Record for having the world's tallest sign. But how many do you think Dubai holds? Now, I know that Hatter, kind of, strictly speaking, is in, you know, the Emirate of Dubai. But the latest Guinness World Record has actually been awarded to the Twin Towers of the One Zabil. Now, that's been officially declared the longest cantilevered building in the world. You know that sort of, that cantilever, that's the sticky outy bit from One Zabil. And then other notable records that the Emirate holds includes, you know, many held by the Burj Khalifa, you know, for being tall and, you know, having tall restaurants, therefore, and also having the most fireworks set off a building, you know, and the highest base jump from a building. You get the gist, it's pretty tall. But what are the other more unusual records? I couldn't help but think it when I saw this new sort of cantilever one. And then occasionally you'll see ones for flags and all sorts of other things. And I was just like, what's going on here with Dubai? Like, I understand it's a brilliant sort of publicity moment, a publicity stunt. But are there any other cities who devote themselves to getting Guinness World Records in quite the same way? So we decided to find out, and Milani went on a quest and managed to persuade Shadi Gard, who is Senior Marketing Manager for Guinness World Records in the Middle East, North Africa and Turkey, not just to talk to us, but to come into the studio to talk to us. And Shadi is here right now. Thank you so much for your time. Lovely to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, okay, so bring it on. How many world records does Dubai hold?
So currently, and this changes on a daily basis.
Daily. I love the daily.
It's now 640 records in the UAE, and 60% of them, around 60% of them are in Dubai. So
around 640?
In the UAE,
In the
yes.
UAE. Yeah. Okay, like, does that make us stand out? Is it, you know, are we unusual in that?
It does, but Dubai stands out in general, because the reality is the vision of the country, the UAE, they really do focus on ambition, on innovation. They try to be the best, and the reality is that goes hand in hand with record breaking. So I wouldn't consider it unusual. I would say it's something that is extremely inspiring.
It's indicative, I suppose,
definitely,
of the city. Okay, but some of the records are random. They're really weird, some of them.
I think the word weird is subjective, because the reality is what is weird to you and I, for example, could be something very, very important to somebody else. So exciting, I would say the word is definitely.
So I'm totally down with world's tallest building, and then, you know, world's tallest base jump, world's biggest, world's tallest, world's fattest, world's thinnest, world's smallest.
Yeah.
That's all cool. But then some of them are quite unusual, aren't they?
I mean, we've got some very, very fun records. You know, I have a fun list here.
No, let's bring it on.
So we've got most people crammed in a smart car. Do you want to guess how many people can fit in a smart car?
And they did that in Dubai.
That was not in Dubai. No.
That was one of your really random ones.
The globe,
okay,
yeah.
Most people in a smart car, 11.
20.
No.
I mean, it's a world record. So it has
are they small people?
I don't know. We have over 68,000 records on our system. So you can imagine there are so many world records.
Okay, bring me another random one. Weird one.
This is an interesting one. Largest human mattress dominoes.
What is that?
So basically, the person is attached to the mattress and then they fall down in a domino effect. It was 1,001 mattresses.
I mean, who does that? Who thinks? Yeah. I know. Yeah. I'm going to line up a bunch of mattresses and domino them with humans in between. That's so brilliant. Is Dubai unusual in the way it sort of works to have as many of these world records as possible?
See, as I said, I don't think it's unusual because the reality is Dubai is just a visionary city.
Yeah.
And the reality is they just, as a city and as a country, and actually as a region, I would say we really do want to be the best. And that goes hand in hand with what Guinness World Records is all about, which is just being the best. And we see a lot of that in the UAE, especially with landmark and infrastructure records. So
yeah,
just like the link by Wan Za Bil, the tallest cantilevered building,
yeah,
longest cantilevered building. We have a lot of landmark records. The largest fountain. You've got a lot of records. Dubai is the largest shopping mall by surface area. So we have a lot of records broken in the region, and we love to see that.
Well, we've also got here in Dubai, we've got the world record for the deepest dive pool. So we don't just go up; we also apparently go down.
That's Deep Dive Dubai. That was actually a really incredible. I haven't had a chance to visit, but definitely people that have gone have said it's incredible because it's 60 meters, I think.
Well, you must see all these crazy stunts. So apparently the largest human sentence was done out here. That was awarded to pupils of GEMS Education. That was in celebration of the UAE's 44th National Day.
Yeah.
Then we've got the fastest police car in service.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Bugatti Veyron that has a top speed of 407 kilometres per hour. This was very random. The most people performing burpees. That came round. I think we might have lost that one now, but that was in 2017. Apparently, nearly 1,500 people performed burpees at the same time.
So, as you can imagine these. So as you said, there's a lot of diverse records. So they're not just about landmarks, which is very popular, obviously, in the UAE. But obviously, there's a lot of, it could be gym related records. It could be sports. It could be technology. We have so many different. And obviously, as a country, as a company, we have to innovate. So we always update our database based on the latest trends. You know, you've got things like that didn't exist 10 years ago. So suddenly, there's cybersecurity, there's metaverse. So these things kind of have to always be included. So for a world record, you have to break the one that's previous. But if there isn't a previous record holder, then Guinness World Records will do research, will create a challenging minimum to break. And then that would be a new world record. And then the cycle continues and people start breaking it. And people get very competitive in general. People, individuals and organizations get competitive because your record, you can perform it, you can achieve it now and it can be broken in a week. Like, for example, in January, we had the, what was it? It was the most nationalities in a yoga lesson. So this was, and obviously with the UAE, we have a lot of nationalities. So we had 144 nationalities doing a yoga lesson. This record has been broken multiple times.
Oh, no, they took it away from us.
No, so this was the last one. But previously, it was broken multiple times in different countries. And so it fuels that competition, which we love to see.
That is awesome. It is hugely fun. The Guinness World Record, always, always really good fun. Shadi Gard, Senior Marketing Manager for the team there at the Guinness World Records for the Middle East, North Africa and Turkey. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time. Great to have you in.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're looking at a really important story now, actually, because diabetes sufferers in Abu Dhabi's Al Dhafra area are soon going to have a one-stop shop for their treatment. Now, I say it's important because it's not just a sort of normal health institution, a normal hospital. It will become a key part of the community there because we have serious problems with diabetes in this country. One in five people here suffer from the condition, and that number is expected to double by 2040. Worth mentioning that the rate here is quite a lot worse than the global average. It's 1 in 10 around the rest of the world. Now, this new M42 Imperial College London Diabetes Centre is going to have tech-enabled services, and it will be able to cater for more than 6,000 residents in that area who are suffering from both diabetes and also endocrine disorders. It's a state-of-the-art facility. It's located in Madinat Zayed, and it's going to basically help people who live in, I guess, Liwa, Murfa, Ruais and Tarif, among others. Joining me now to tell me a bit more about it is Dr. Mai Al-Jaba, who is the CEO of the Imperial College London Diabetes Centre. Dr. Al-Jaba, thank you so much for joining me on the line this morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. And good morning, Georgia.
It's lovely to have you with us. Tell me a little bit more about the facilities that you're going to have at this centre, because it says it's tech-enabled. What does that actually mean?
Absolutely. So the opening of Imperial College London Diabetes Centre, one stop, and as you mentioned, tech-enabled facility in Madinat Zayed, in fact, underscores M42 and Imperial College London Diabetes Centre commitment to providing premium world-class diabetes and endocrine care to the community in Al-Dhafra region. The establishment of ICLDC in Madinat Zayed will provide the people there with opportunities to receive the best patient-centric and comprehensive care in one accessible location. And referring to the tech enablement or technology, I'm proud to say that ICLDC Al-Dhafra will have the most type of advanced technology related to diabetes care, like the insulin pumps, including the closed-loop system, also called the artificial pancreas, where the pump releases insulin based on readings from the continuous glucose monitoring device that is also available at ICLDC, in addition to the mobile apps and remote monitoring tools. All of those technology will be available for our patients in the Al-Dhafra region.
Why is it actually being opened in this particular community? Is diabetes a bit of a problem?
In fact, we thought of opening the opening ICLDC in the Al-Dhafra region to address the needs of people in that region for the care, for the world-class care, I would say, when it comes to diabetes and endocrine diagnosis, management and treatment.
And can, with the right treatment, can diabetes and the condition of people suffering from diabetes be really improved upon? Because I suppose that must be the overarching aim of the centre.
Absolutely. So at ICLDC, we're aiming to continue improving the diabetes control by lowering the what is called the HbA1c, that control or that measure the blood sugar in the blood in the past 2 to 3 months. So we're aiming to lower this metrics, the HbA1c, and as well reducing the opportunity of developing diabetes-related complications through this comprehensive care delivered by our multidisciplinary team.
Why is it so important to have a sort of one-stop shop for diabetes treatment?
As you know, the diabetic patients usually require multiple visits to their care provider, regular visit with their care provider. And by opening ICLDC in the Al-Dhafra region and bringing this comprehensive care closer to the patients there in Al-Dhafra, it will cut the travel time to ICLDC Abu Dhabi by around 75%, where, for example, the visit to the branches in Abu Dhabi can be limited only to the more complex cases. And this is the purpose of having ICLDC available in the Al-Dhafra region.
Dr. Maya Al-Jaber, it's been a great pleasure having you join us here on The Agenda. Thank you so much for all that information. We really appreciate it. Dr. Al-Jaber is the CEO of Imperial College London Diabetes Centre. That is a new M42 centre that is due to open in the coming months in Abu Dhabi. So great to hear about that new facility.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I have got more mosquito bites around my ankles than I think I have ever had in my entire life. It's like I've been, I don't know, it's like there's a sort of infestation. And in our community, we've all been complaining about it. They go around fairly often and fog. But we've had so much rain recently that I think the mozzies are breeding their larvae in sort of secret corners. They're particularly long-legged and stripy. They're reasonably slow-moving, which means you can get them. And we've got one of those tennis bats. And I think it might be the moment that you manage to kill a mosquito with one of those bats, I think it's up there with one of the sort of best moments in my life. You know, everything crystallizes around that wonderful crackle when you manage to catch one. And sometimes I hear other members of my family succeeding around the house. You'll hear the crackle and I will yell down the stairs, "Oh, well done!" Like someone's actually, you know, scored some sort of victory. Anyway, so yes, my passionate hatred against mosquitoes knows no bounds. We've got one of those weird killers. You know, the lights, the purple lights that you sit in the corner? Yeah, that does nothing. Don't bother with those. I mean, literally, I think it's killed one moth in the last 2 months. Does nothing. Apparently, they come for carbon dioxide. And that's why my husband reckons he gets bitten more. And I say it's because he's a heavy breather. But the kids get bitten all the time as well. But yeah, we can't find a way to kill them. And don't tell me about citronella candles. They smell very nice, but they are not powerful. They're not nuclear enough to deal with the problem at hand at the moment. So if you have any suggestions of maybe it's something I need to eat, someone said garlic, but you know that would just make everyone stand very far back, wouldn't it? Anyway, how can we deal with the mosquito problem? Certainly big uptick. And that's the sort of jokey, fun side of things. And I'm sure we'll all come up with some different solutions for the mosquitoes. But there are actually concerns that cases of dengue fever seem to be rising in the country. That is despite it previously being very, very rarely reported in the Emirates. Several doctors here have suggested that they are seeing increasing cases of the tropical disease. The link, obviously, to mosquitoes is that it's spread by mosquitoes. And certainly a number of Arab nations have reported a real uptick over the sort of last two decades. It's up 88% in the MENA region between 1990 and 2019. Now, essentially, dengue fever is a waterborne disease and it can cause serious illness. So why might we be seeing more cases right here in the UAE? Joining me now to tell us more is Dr. Saeed Nadir. He is Medical Director and Internal Medicine Specialist at AT Adam Vital Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Nadir. How are you? Good morning to you.
Hello. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning. Tell me, what is dengue fever? Why do we need to be worried about it?
Yes, it's been there for the last couple of decades. But what has happened now from the last, let's say, 10, 15 years, the number of the cases has increased tremendously. And it's not in this part of the world. Overall, worldwide, it has increased from a few hundred thousands 10, 15 years back to now it's reached to more than 5.2 million. So that's, we can see the increased number of the cases. That's what happened. So one of the things that rings bells that why the numbers are increasing. So there are many multiple reasons. One of the most common reasons is the climate change. Global warming is one of the reasons. Excess tourism, people going from one part of the world to another part of the world frequently has increased the dengue fever. Basically, dengue is specifically, if we are talking today, it's one of the viruses, called flavivirus, which the mosquito carries. So not all the mosquitoes have dengue. It's a common misconception. If we are being bitten by the mosquito that we will have dengue, no. Some mosquitoes, namely with the family, of course, like Aedes aegypti, and the virus is flavivirus. So once the mosquito have this virus, and it can easily transmit this disease, what we call as dengue.
What disease does it cause? What are the symptoms?
The most common symptom for dengue is fever and headaches. It's normally after you're being bitten by dengue virus, you will have an incubation period of 3 to 7 days. You won't have any symptoms. But after, let's say, 4 to 5 days, the first symptom which normally we see is the fever, which it goes as high-grade fever and along with the headache. But of course, you will have other symptoms that start from severe body pain, malaise, severe weaknesses, nausea, abdominal pain. Diarrhea is less, but most of the general symptoms which started with fever and headaches, and it goes worse for the first, let's say, 6, 7, 8 days. And then later on, when our immunity works it out, it goes back towards normal within the end of the week or 9 or 10 days. But most of course, what happened is sometime when our immunity is not good, when we have children or elderly age group, sometimes this went from mild infection to a moderate or a severe infection. So that's where they have to visit the doctor, and then they have certain kind of treatment has to be taken care of.
So there is treatment for it, and you can, you know, most people recover from it quite happily. Have you seen an uptick in cases in the UAE?
Well, till now, we don't have any official data from the government that how many cases we have, how many cases has been reported. But yes, we have seen even in the emergency departments, because we are dealing and talking with other hospitals, ER also. So it came to know that, yes, the cases has increased, not tremendously, very good, that it's not increased to a level. But yes, the cases we have reported, like, for example, once we used to report only 4 to 5 cases or 10 cases a year, now it has gone to 20 to 30 cases a year. But most of them cases are mild to moderate cases, which doesn't need hospitalization. Only few percent of the cases, which was, I told you, immunocompromised patients and who have any history of elderly patient or sick patient, they go to the severe illness and then they will need hospitalization and certain specialized care. But in general, it is taken care by the immunity, normally takes it by itself. But the most problem, what happens is, if you have heard the name platelets, these viruses, they attack on the blood platelets. So what are the platelets, basically? We have to understand the platelets that will help to stop the bleeding in our body immune system. So once the platelet levels goes down, there is an increased tendency of bleeding. So that's what happened. The first symptom in severe cases, you start to see there is a gum bleed. You will see bleeding from urine or all small areas, you will see start bleeding. So once again, these are the severe cases we are talking about. But majority of the time, it remains between mild to moderate with fever, headaches, body aches, arthralgias. And within 7, 8 days, it starts to settle down.
Okay, so say there are a few more of these dengue mosquitoes flying around. How can you protect yourself from catching dengue fever, both here or if you're traveling around the rest of the Middle East or into Asia?
Yeah, so as you told earlier, the best way is to have the tennis racket with you, if it's possible, number one. Number two is mosquito repellents. You know, we have, you go in the market, you will find different kind of mosquito repellents. They are good. They are doing a better job. Of course, the smell is not very nice, but that will help. Long loose clothes, they're helpful. If you have any pond of water outside, that needs to be taken care of, because they are the main manifestation where the larva grow of this dengue virus. So make sure these things are clean. So these small precaution needs to be taken care of. If you fear of dengue, if there's an increased chance of getting dengue, the one area where we can see most dengues are in the green areas. We have gardens, so that once again, that makes sure that there is no remaining water in the ground. Once again, sometimes there's a remaining water, a small pond of water there in the garden area, and it remains there for 24 hours. So that could be a good manifestation also for the dengue virus and the mosquito to grow their larvae. So once again, those things needs to be taken care of.
Can I ask you just something very quickly? You said just if a pool of water was just there for 24 hours, is that long enough for mosquito larvae to hatch, to, you know, be laid and hatch?
Yeah, it's good enough. They can hatch. And they can, yeah, so that's a problem. So once again, make sure that the surface should be clean and dry. So that needs to be done.
Absolutely fascinating conversation there. Certainly, I'm going to be getting out the... we've got one of these roll-on sticks that I've been using around my ankles, and that does seem to have some effect. But you'd think that the smell of it would drive them away, but they still seem to be able to target the one bit of my body that I have failed to put mosquito repellent on. And I refuse to put it on my face. I'm not putting DEET on my face. But really lovely to have you join us on the line. Thank you so much for that clarity regarding dengue fever. You've just been hearing the voice there of Dr. Saeed Nadir, who is medical director and internal medicine specialist at Adam Vital Hospital. Thank you very much indeed for your time this Thursday morning.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Now, Airbnb landlords are apparently counting their profits after a steep increase in interest in holiday rentals right here in Dubai. Now, the number of listings in the Emirate has apparently doubled in the last 3 years. That is a huge growth if you think about it. And in 2022, the Emirates was actually ranked as apparently the most profitable location in the world for Airbnb landlords. That is according to CIA Landlords. And if you think about it, that is... You know, that makes it very interesting as an investment proposition, you know, if you can afford it, you know, if you can get on that ladder. Now, at the moment, there are just under 25,000 active Airbnb listings here in Dubai. That is up by more than 11,000 from 2021. And apparently they have an annual average occupancy of 56%. Now, that number doesn't sound quite as good. That is according to ValueStrat. Now, they've done all the sort of research on this. And I have to admit, you have to sort of say, as a journalist, you have to say your sources. And a big thanks to Neil Halligan at The National, who wrote this up for The National newspaper. That is where we've got this story. ValueStrat provided the stats. And I'm delighted to say I am now joined by Hada Tuaimi, who is the director and head of real estate research for the company. Hada, thank you for your time. Let's get into the nitty gritty of this research. Okay, for example, where are the majority of these Airbnb properties located?
Yes, hi, hello, good morning, Ramadan Kareem to everyone. They're located all over the city, but the vast majority of them are concentrated in four areas. So you have Palm Jumeirah, you have Dubai Marina, Jumeirah Beach Residence, downtown Dubai Business Bay.
And are they villas or apartments?
Well, they're a combination. You can have five-bedroom, six-bedroom villas also available in Airbnb, short-term rentals. But the vast majority are apartments.
Let's get into how much these apartments and houses are renting for. Do they get a good rate of return on a sort of weekly basis? Because I guess that's probably how you look at the stats. Or do you look at it on a night-by-night basis?
Oh, so it's a little bit complicated than that. If it was a hotel and you're looking at number of guest nights or looking at the daily rates, and it would make sense. But when it comes to short-term holiday homes, and that is the term that is used, short-term, it may not necessarily be a daily rate or a weekly rate. It can also be a monthly rate. So it's better to look at it on a monthly basis or maybe on an annual basis, let's say, if we were to try to figure out the occupancy so that we can compare apples to apples. But generally speaking, if it's a daily rate, you're looking at 800 dirhams per day, but that's assuming it's 100% occupied the whole day.
Yeah, let's
get the whole year.
Let's get into that occupancy rate, because, of course, we do know that weather-wise, you know, the UAE is probably not the most popular holiday destination during July, August and September. And I mentioned there in my introduction that the annual average occupancy is 56%. Now, to me, that doesn't sound like very much. You'll know more about, you know, how that compares to other regions and other cities.
No, that doesn't sound like a great number. And if we were to compare holiday homes, short-term holiday homes, with proper hotel apartments. And with hotel apartments, the occupancy per annum is around 80%, 81%. So, and you're looking at apartments also, but they happen to be serviced and furnished. So definitely 56% is not a good number. As I mentioned, half of the holiday homes in Dubai offered are in the good areas, so in the more touristy areas. But then there's the other half, which are not really as lucky. So when you get an average, obviously it will be impacted by the other half of the equation. It doesn't mean that every single apartment or villa is going to get 56%. It's very possible you get 80-90%. But at the same time, you might get 30 or 40%. So on average, it is the 56%.
So do you think that that means that there is still scope for growth in this market? Should I view that as a good sign or a negative sign, do you think, for, you know, how much Airbnb rentals appeal to our tourists here in the UAE?
It definitely appeals to the tourists, particularly the younger generation, I would think. You know, you can use the app, you can use the website, and you can find nice places, check the reviews, check how many stars it's achieved. And from the reputation, you can, you know, take a pick. But generally, location is key. So the potential here depends very much on the homework that the landlord has to do. Picking the right location, picking the right size of apartment, the right building. But definitely there is potential for growth because this is a young market, generally speaking, and holiday homes were only introduced a few years back. So definitely there's a huge room for growth.
Good news indeed for those people who are potentially looking into getting into the market and maybe renting their home or their flat as an Airbnb property or indeed through any of the other platforms. Had a really interesting to get those stats from you. Thank you so much for joining me on the agenda this morning. That was Hada Tuaimi. He's Director and Head of Real Estate Research at ValueStrat. We are getting already a lot of comments about Airbnb from people who are choosing to rent flats through Airbnb, people who choose to go with Airbnb on their holiday. Some people not that keen, though, on Airbnb. It has to be said, this person's getting in touch anonymously saying Airbnb has devastated the cities of Barcelona and Athens. And today the locals cannot rent. Thousands of properties off the market have pushed rents up very high for locals, and that forces them to leave to other towns. And that means that employers are not able to hire people. It really can be a disaster. That's a very interesting viewpoint. Meanwhile, Ricky has got in touch. He's a fan. He says he owns a two-bedroom townhouse in the Springs community, and lots of people are renovating their homes and want to stay in the same community while the work is going on. So he's been renting his place out, and his longest staying guest was paying him 26,000 dirhams a month for 7 months. That was fully furnished with all bills and Wi-Fi included, but that was almost double a long-term staying guest, you know, a long-term rental, a rent, basically. So it sounds like it's worked out for Ricky. Has it worked out for you? I'd love to hear from you. Do get in touch with me, 4001, or of course you can WhatsApp me on 04871 5500.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda with Georgia Tolley
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are talking about renting properties on the show today, specifically via Airbnb, because it turns out that quite a few Airbnb landlords are counting their profits after a steep increase in interest in holiday rentals right here in Dubai. In fact, the number of listings in the Emirate has actually doubled in the last 3 years. And in 2022, the Emirates was ranked as the most profitable location in the world for Airbnb landlords. Now, that was by an organisation called CIA landlords. And I have to admit, that stat caught my interest. I was a bit like, oh, so is that a way that you could maybe make money? You might remember earlier in the show this week, we were talking about pensions and, you know, how you can develop a savings pot for your retirement. And Steve Cronin from Dead Simple Saving was talking about how you can either invest in stocks and shares as an asset class, or you can invest in property as an asset class. So I suppose this would sort of fall into the property department for obvious reasons. Now, at the moment, there are just 25,000 active Airbnb listings in the UAE, in Dubai, I think specifically. That is up by more than 11,000 from 2021. And then this is the stat that worries me a bit. They have an annual average occupancy of 56%. Okay, that's all according to ValueStrat. So how can you make money from Airbnb? One man doing very well for himself is Radit Negate. He runs a holiday home business called Smart Stay. He currently has a portfolio of 24 properties listed on Airbnb. And he's also the founder of the B&B in Dubai community. You can find him on Instagram, as I did, at B&B in Dubai. And it's great to have you join us in the studio, Radit. How are you?
Thank you, Georgia. First of all, thank you for inviting me. It's a big pleasure to be here. Doing good. Looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me, when and why did you start your company here in the UAE?
I got my license in March last year, but I started with my first apartment in June 2023. That was my first apartment. And the reason why I started in the UAE, in Dubai specifically, is because there's like this huge potential of growth in Dubai that has already been like showcase in over the last 20, 30 years. And I see a lot of growth in the future in the tourism sector as well. The government is really supporting as well. And that helps, you know. There are a couple more reasons, obviously, but Dubai was the place to be for me and to start my company.
Now, did you move out to Dubai from the Netherlands, or were you already here?
Oh, that's a funny story, because initially my idea was to do like just a few apartments, run it remotely from the Netherlands, because I lived in The Hague, I must say now, in the Netherlands. I wanted to do it remotely, but at some point I saw the huge potential of actually putting more time and effort and moving here. And also it required the effort to like grow the business in a proper way. So now I moved last September and now I'm living here in this beautiful city.
Fantastic. Now tell me why you thought there was opportunities here. You know, I guess there must be quite a lot of rules around renting on Airbnb, you know, government regulations.
Yes. So this is the thing, like all around the world, there's like the question, can you do Airbnb? Is it legal? Is it allowed? That differs like in every country, in every city, right? The great thing here in Dubai is it is regulated. There's clear regulation. You don't have to be afraid or scared that when you set up your company this year and you invest a lot of money, that next year suddenly the government is going to change the regulations and you have to stop or shut down, or the nights that you can do Airbnb is going to be drastically reduced. So that's a great thing. The regulation is there. So first of all, you will need like a mainland LLC, a mainland company here in Dubai. Once you have your mainland company, you can get your license from the DTCM. And from that point onwards, you get your permits per unit from the owner, an NOC, from the DTCM, a permit, and then from the building, also a permit to move in as a holiday home company.
So that's if you want to do it as a company. Can you do it as an Correct. Individual as well? Do you still need to make a company in order to do it as an individual if you just wanted to rent out your own apartment?
That there are some nuances to that.
Okay.
So if you own the apartments, you can do it with 8 apartments or units in Dubai. If you own them, you can do it without a company. If you rent an apartment, it can only be one completely by yourself, but you will need the approval of the owner.
Wow, you really know all the details. That's amazing.
I try to, yeah.
And what's so interesting is you say there that what's good about the government here is that they clarified those regulations, because I remember back in London, loads of people were doing it in London. And then all of a sudden this rule came out that you were only allowed to rent for a certain number of days.
Exactly.
And the bottom instantly fell out of that market. You know, people were having to sell flats because they couldn't cover their costs ultimately.
Exactly. I mean, it's the same thing in the Netherlands, right? The margins in a lot of other countries are higher than in Dubai. So on average, if you're doing a good job, if you do rental arbitrage, that's the model I use most, where I rent an apartment for the long term and I sublet it for short-term rentals, there's like a multiple. So you make on revenue approximately 1.8 times the annual rent if you do it on a short-term basis, full-time, and you do it well. Now, that's a multiple in Dubai. In other countries, it could be higher. For example, in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam, the multiple is way higher. There are a lot of places where the multiple could be higher, but then the government steps in and there might be a shortage of housing and that will basically restrict the nights you can do Airbnb. So it's not even possible anymore. So Dubai is a very competitive market. It's not the most attractive market to do subleasing on a from a purely from a profit perspective, but you can scale and you can be safe because you don't have to be scared that from one night to the other, suddenly you have to shut down your business.
We are talking about the booming market in short-term rentals in Dubai on the programme today. That is after Airbnb landlords are counting their profits after a steep increase in interest in holiday rentals right here in the Emirate. Now, the number of listings in Dubai has doubled in the last 3 years, and the Emirates is being ranked as the most profitable location in the world for Airbnb landlords. So is it something that you ought to get involved in? I'm not saying you have to list your platform on Airbnb, but is it an opportunity for people who maybe could buy a property and then rent it out on a short-term basis? I'm delighted to say I've got two guests now in the studio with me. I've got Radit Nagar. The thing is that I've written down Radit's name so that I pronounce it in the right way. And now I've lost the page. Here we go. It is Radit Nagarte who has joined me in the studio. Thank you very much indeed. Now, Radit is from SmartStay. He's got a portfolio of 24 properties listed on Airbnb. He stayed with me because we want to talk about sort of Airbnb trends. But then I've also got joining me on the line, Joe Phillips, who is a mortgage broker with Phillips and Walls Mortgage Brokers. And Joe's joined us on Teams. And the reason why I've got Joe involved is because we've got lots of messages coming in from people who are like, you know, is this something that I could do as an investment sort of proposition? You know, if I can't buy a house for my family because, you know, I haven't got enough money for something that big, maybe I could buy something smaller, a studio apartment or something like that, and then rent it out on the short-term market. So Joe, thank you so much for joining me on the line. How are you?
Morning, Georgia. Absolutely fabulous to be here. And nice to see you again.
Yeah, lovely to see you as well. Now, have you had many people looking to get mortgages for sort of buy to let, both sort of long term and short term rentals?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot now where people have already bought their home and they're now looking for investment properties. So what we're seeing on that level is, you know, properties that are under $1 million dirham, they're looking for a studio or a one bedroom. They've already got their mortgage with another, with their own home. So they now want to branch out and, you know, with deposit levels on second properties, you'd have to put 40% down. But for anything under $1 million, then that's not that much to actually put down in order to rent out. So we are seeing, you know, quite a few people going for second properties nowadays.
I mean, that is interesting, though, that number that you just mentioned there, which I don't think very many people know about. So if you have a second property, you have to put down 40%.
Correct. Yes. So the first property that you buy, you can get up to 80%. OK. And then the second property that you buy, you would have to put a 40% down payment as opposed to the 20% for the first one.
OK. So as far as sort of return for investment versus mortgage repayments, are you allowed to do a buy to let with just interest only?
Not interest only, no. So there is a bank that does interest only for the first year, but the majority of the banks will only do capital repayments. So this is where, if you're doing Airbnb in terms of seasonality, you know, if you're doing, you know, obviously if it gets a bit quieter, maybe in July, August, when people aren't visiting as much as they, you know, would be, then obviously you've got to keep those mortgage payments up and it is on a repayment basis.
Right. Joe, hold on for a second, because I want to go back to Radate, who is right here in the studio, because that is quite interesting. The fact that you are, if you're going to go down the buying property route, then you will need to be making a regular profit. You will need to be making regular money. Radate, let me ask you about these rules around renting on Airbnb. Do they have rules about what you're required to do in order to qualify for their platform?
Well, there are rules on Airbnb, and I think that there are more rules in Dubai specifically, so to say, than on the platform of Airbnb as for the property and the qualifications of the property. So in Dubai, you can only put your whole apartments or whole house on short-term rental, and you cannot rent out rooms. On Airbnb, you could. So as long as you adhere to the DTCM rules and regulations, you'll be good for the Airbnb specific ones as well in Dubai.
So you tend to look after apartments for people, don't you? So your owners are covering all the sort of mortgage repayments and all the rest of it, and you're just managing the properties for them.
Yes. So there are like two models I work in. One is subleasing, rental arbitrage. So I rent the apartment on a long term and I short term sublet it to, for example, tourists. And the other model is revenue sharing, where a landlord, an owner, an investor buys an apartment or buys a villa and gives it to me to maximize their ROI. Right. So what I then do is I list it on all the platforms, take care of the check-in, check-outs, we furnish it, et cetera, et cetera. We take a cut, a commission, and the biggest chunk of the revenue is going to be for the landlord. So the landlord will make more money on the short term than on the long term.
Are there tricks to the trade? Like, are there ways to make your apartment look more attractive to tourists, for example?
Yeah, yeah. This is like super important, especially in a competitive market like Dubai. You cannot be just one of the 25,000, I believe even more by now, listings. You need to stand out. So obviously it's pricing. You need to have a competitive price. Make sure to use smart pricing. So when there is high occupancy, you have higher pricing. When there's low occupancy, low demand, lower pricing, you can automate that with software. That's one. Second, your listing needs to be attractive. So you must remember, people don't buy your apartment or your villa. They buy the photos. They buy the listing, right? They look online. They see the listing. And based on what they see in the listing and on the pictures, they decide. So the quality of the pictures is very important. And lastly, you want to make sure, actually two more things. One is the reviews. You must be a super host. You must have like a high review average to attract new guests. And what's also very important, you need to have the amenities. So like for example, a baby bed or like a washer dryer, such things, you know, you basically tick them in your search results on Airbnb. And the more things you select, the less units that will be left. So the less competition you will have as an Airbnb host.
Now, Joe, we've been chatting to Redate about sort of Airbnb trends and the best way that you can make money on these short-term rental platforms. Let's talk about, you know, actually being able to buy a property in order to enter this market. We've heard already that if you're buying a second property, you need to have a 40% deposit for the bank to lend you money. Do the banks also calculate your rate of return depending on what you're going to do with the property, like whether you're going to long-term or short-term rent it?
It makes no difference. In terms of second properties, first properties, all they take is your income, okay? They don't take future rental income, anything like that. So your affordability has to be that you can cover either both of the mortgages if you've got your own property and you want an investment property, or just buying an investment property. It has to be based on your income. So they don't take any future rental yields or future rental payments that you may receive.
That's different to other jurisdictions, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So in the UK, they will take it on, you know, whatever rental yield, they'll usually times it by 125% of whatever, you know, rent you're receiving. Here, it's based on your income. So they want to make sure that if the property isn't rented out, that you can still afford those monthly mortgage payments.
Do you think it's still a viable option in this country, despite those sort of restrictions?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, if you're looking at properties, you know, studios or one beds, you know, we're seeing quite a popular market in the Marina, JLT area, that sort of thing, where, you know, for tourists and, you know, even new people that we're seeing coming into the market now on Airbnb, where they're saying they're staying there, but they want to stay there for maybe 3 months so that they can then get on the property ladder, as opposed to doing long leases of a year that ties them in. So where we're seeing the trend that people are tending to take mortgages out quicker and earlier than before, where they'd rent for a year, decide what they want to do, they're going into Airbnbs and, you know, working out the areas that they want to buy and doing it from there.
Joe Phillips, lovely to have your thoughts on that. I'm going to turn back for the last minute to Redate, because you mentioned there, Joe, the idea that you could maybe have people who are coming into the country who want to rent for a few months while they find their feet. I want to talk to Redate now about trends in this short-term rental market. Yes. I've got about a minute left with you. Is that one of the trends? You're seeing people who are coming in and, you know, just taking a place for a couple of months?
Yes, we do get guests who stay like for a week initially and then happen to extend for another week and a week and a week, and we can stay for a couple of months, especially in the one beds and studios, like Joe just said. These are like great relocation, like intermediary houses before they find their own property. So although I think in the trend, the biggest trend here in Dubai is the competition is increasing a lot, right? So the like you just said, within 3 years from 11,000 to 25,000, that's a huge increase. So the increased competition will require Airbnb hosts to differentiate, to be different, to stand out. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge over the coming years for Airbnb hosts to still make money. You can do it. It's really possible to do it, to be a profitable business, but you must stand out from the competition. And that's actually one of the reasons I set up my community. Because for me, when I started the company last year, there was no information available, right? There was nothing. The information was there, but very scattered. And now with this community, I try to have it like at one place for everybody, and also have the Airbnb hosts, starting Airbnb hosts, help each other out and make sure that we can win in the landscape of Airbnb in Dubai.
And what's it like? Is there a good community? Have you found lots of people who are in the same zone?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's super nice. Actually, tomorrow we're going to have dinner with a group. We're reaching around 100 members of the B&B in Dubai community. It's great. And people help each other out. We share like good deals for either cleaning, software, etc., etc. And also like the tricks, like how do you make profit? Like what locations, what type of like apartments? Maybe if I can share like one little insight, you see that the competition on 2 and 3 or ideally even 4 beds, that competition is way less than the studios and the 1 beds. So this is one of the things that I share in the community. You see that the profit numbers for these multi-bedroom apartments are just higher than the studios and the 1 beds. So these things we share and we help each other out in the community. It's great to see. I love the energy there. Yeah.
Really lovely to have you join us in the studio today. Honestly, I've had 3 fantastic guests on this topic. Huge thanks there to Redate Nagate for joining us. He's the CEO of smartstay.me. You can find his community. It is the @B&B in Dubai community on Instagram. You also heard from Joe Phillips, who's a mortgage broker with Phillips and Walls Mortgage Brokers. And then a little bit earlier, we had Hada Tuaimi, who's the director and head of real estate research at Value Strat. Fascinating conversation. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is The Agenda
on Dubai Eye 103.8.